Shalom.
Hello.
Do you know what shalom means?
I would assume it means hello or a greeting of some sort.
Yeah, it's a greeting, but it's technically means peace.
Okay.
So we're back again, starting off in Genesis 28, where we left off last time, and I think we'll just probably get right into it.
Mm-hmm.
From last week, I'll read. We'll talk about that and get going, all right?
Alrighty, sounds good to me.
All right. Genesis, Bereshit, in Hebrew, chapter 28. So Yitzhak called Yaakov, and after blessing him, charged him, "You are not to choose a wife from the Hittite women. Go now to the home of Betuel, your mother's father, and choose a wife there from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May El Shaddai bless you, make you fruitful, and increase your descendants until they become a whole assembly of people. And may he give you the blessing which he gave Avraham, you and your descendants with you, so that you will possess the land you will travel through, the land God gave to Avraham." So Yitzhak sent Yaakov away, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, son of Betuel, the Aramite, the brother of Rivkah, Yaakov, and Esau's mother. Now Esau saw that Yitzhak had blessed Yaakov, and sent him away to Padan Aram to choose a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he charged him, "You are not to choose a Canaanite woman as your wife, Mather." And that Yaakov had listened to his father and mother and gone to Padan Aram. Esau also saw that the Canaanite woman did not please Yitzhak, his father. So Esau went to Yishmael and took, in addition to the wives he already had, Mahalat, the daughter of Yishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife. Yaakov went out from Beersheba and traveled toward Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed the night there. Because the sun had set, he took a stone from the place, put it under his head, and lay down there to sleep. He dreamt that there before him was a ladder resting on the ground, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of Adonai were going up and down on it. Then suddenly Adonai was standing there next to him, and he said, "I am Adonai, the God of Avraham, your grandfather, the God of Yitzhak. The land on which you are lying I will give to you and to your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the grains of dust on the earth. You will expand to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. By you and your descendants, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Look, I am with you. I will guard you wherever you go. I will bring you back into this land, because I won't leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Yaakov awoke from his sleep and said, "Truly, Adonai is in this place, and I didn't know it." Then he became afraid and said, "The place is fearsome. This has to be the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Yaakov got up early in the morning. Took the stone he had put his head under, set it up as a standing stone, poured olive oil on its top, and named the place Beit El, House of God. But the town had originally been called Luz. Yaakov took this vow, "If God will be with me and will guard me on this road that I am traveling, giving me bread to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return to my father's house in peace, then Adonai will be my God. And this stone, which I have set up as a standing stone, will be God's house. And of everything you give me, I will faithfully return one-tenth to you." Was there anything there that stood out to you?
Nothing that really stood out to me there.
Okay. So a couple big things for me is one of the things that... So I got a new Bible this week, and a lot of the names are in Hebrew, so that's where they're probably going to sound different when I read mine or you're reading yours. So Yitzhak, Isaac, called Yaakov, Jacob, and told him not to choose a wife from the Hittite woman. And so that's just very interesting to me in the importance of who he's talking about connecting with, right? Whether it's a life partner, a wife, whether it's friends, who we choose to spend our time with and how they impact us and they influence us. So the Hittite women, they were into adultery, having foreign gods, and those types of things. And so that was something that was very displeasing to Yaakov and to Rebecca. So there's really two reasons that he's leaving, right? One is last week we saw that Esau is very angry with him about for stealing his birthright.
Mm-hmm.
And then two is it doesn't seem like there are suitable, there's a suitable mate for him. And so for me, the application is really just trying to place importance as, you know, being picky about who we choose, whether it's as a partner or as our friends, because they do influence us. And these are the people that we are spending our time with on a constant basis. And I've always had this idea that the things we allow our senses to taste, smell, see, hear, really become part of who we are. So the more that we spend time around these things, the music we listen to, the TV that we watch, the books that we read, maybe the foods that we smell even, you know, sugar pies or sugar pies, what the heck? candy, you know, everything, just eating that nonstop isn't good for us, right? Mm-hmm. It does our body no benefit. The music we listen to, the people we surround ourselves, if there's negative people, the things that we watch, those types of things, they become who we are. Mm-hmm. And for me, I know that as I've previously done that, the more that I kind of get into things that I really shouldn't be into, it's, it pulls me away more from who I am, my moral standard, my moral compass. And I just start struggling, and I'm just like fighting for materialism is what I would say. Maybe it's mm-hmm. materialism. Is it, just people I guess there's a better term for population, just being normal and general instead of trying to stand out. And it lessens my value standard. The second thing was where Yaakov laid his head, that there's an idea in Jewish thought that this is the exact same spot that when Abraham went up to the mountain to prepare a sacrifice, when he took Isaac with him and he had him bound, that this is that exact same spot. So I don't really quite understand the reason for the story behind the ladder going up to heaven and what that really does, other than this being some type of a holy or important place. But it just seems like for that story to come out, there has to be some type of significance that I don't really fully understand right now. So those are my thoughts on that.
Okay. You want me to keep reading?
Yeah, unless you have anything to say about what I said. Yeah, go ahead.
No, not really. But other than just the things that you surround yourself with, how they influence you is understated a lot. Just, I mean, like we were saying on one of the previous podcasts, it's like you listen to like a Jordan Peterson, or like if you listen to music all day long while you're at work or something, you just think about the music, you kind of sing along with it. But if you think about like something that tests your knowledge and kind of pushes your boundaries, you start to think a little bit more and you take that into your life and start to think about what you're going to do. And rather than just kind of turning on music and zoning out, I feel like that's just kind of where I was at with that.
Yeah. So for me, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, is that there's essentially three different type genres of music that I listen to that can really change who I am. It's almost like I become a chameleon based on the type of music I'm listening to. So at the gym, I listen to 90s and early 2000s rap. So Notorious B.I.G. and it's gangster rap, right? Yeah, so you're talking about guns and hoes and just like, but it's like, it gives me confidence. It gives me that. But it's like, if you have that mindset, it's just like I've never done drugs in my life. And so it's like, I don't resonate with this music really at all. I've never really done any of it. But it's just like, I in my mind, I'm thinking like, maybe like, oh, baseball or sports, like I change this for that and that for this. And it's like, because it has a good beat and it feels good. And then the second one at the gym for pump up music is 80s and 90s hard rock. So like your Van Halen and your Journey. And it's the exact same thing. You know, they're talking about drugs or, you know, women. Right now, like Journey, like some of the things just really hit. It's about, you know, living right, like life right now in the moment. But then when I'm in the car, I like country music. And so country music is just who I am. Like, but again, they're talking about slamming beers and going out and picking corn and going down the cornfields, which I don't resonate with those, but it keeps me almost, it keeps me grounded, because mm-hmm. it's like this is the lifestyle I want to live. It's not about the materialism, and that's what they're really singing about, right. Is just like the easygoing lifestyle, about how things don't really matter, just not having nice things, but going out and enjoying life and what there is. And so I guess sometimes I just catch myself in the mindset that whatever music I'm listening to, and what that creates, and then what types of thoughts those creates and mm-hmm. create in my head, because I have to be very, very careful that those don't become who I am. And that's where I kind of bring up this, you know, what we listen to, it yeah. does matter. And so I've started really questioning, like, how big of a role does this play, even though I'm just using it for pump up music and workout music in the gym? How does this affect the rest of my life and my mindset and those types of things?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So,
yeah. It's the little things that add up.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, once you start drinking sugar or whatever it is, you know, you take small poison by the amount. It's like the frogs, right? Mm-hmm. So if you put them in water and then you boil it slowly, they sit there and mm-hmm. they just die. And it's just like, you know, what about these things? I don't really realize the ramifications that this probably has on my life.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Alrighty, chapter 29. Jacob arrives in Paddan Aram. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the open country, with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. The stone over the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob asked the shepherds, "My brothers, where are you from?" "We're from Haran," they replied. He said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" "Yes, we know him," they answered. Then Jacob asked them, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." "Look," he said, "the sun is still high. It is not time for the flocks to be gathered. Water the sheep and take them back to the pasture." "We can't," they replied, "until all the flocks are gathered and the stone has been rolled away from the mouth of the well. Then we will water the sheep." While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. When Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah, so she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home, and there Jacob told him all these things. Then Laban said to him, "You are my own flesh and blood." After Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, "Just because you are a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than some other man. Stay here with me." So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is completed, and I want to make love to her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob made love to her. And Laban gave his servant Zilpah to his daughter as her attendant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work." And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her attendant. Jacob made love to Rachel also, and his love for Rachel was greater than his love for Leah. and he worked for Laban another 7 years. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he enabled her to conceive, but Rachel remained childless. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, for she said, "It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now." She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Because the Lord heard that I am not loved, he gave me this one too." So she named him Simeon. Again she conceived, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Now at last my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him three sons." So she named him, he was named Levi. She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "This time I will praise the Lord." So she named him Judah. Then she stopped having children. Anything to add there?
I mean, there's a couple of questions, and I used to have a better understanding of this, but when Jacob came up to the watering well there was a specific reason that that rock was there and they weren't going to remove it, specific for a time. And I don't know if it was because whenever you're close to a well, it's a prime territory for other groups of one to want to fight over it. So if everybody from that group is there together, keeps other people from coming up and trying to take advantage of it. I don't really remember that, but it's just an interesting story. It's like, why do they tell that part of it? It seems like it has to have some significance as to, well, we're not supposed to take the rock off now, but now you did take the rock off. So it's like, well, what was the point of telling us that the rock wasn't supposed to get taken off the stone?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when we go down here to, like, it talks about Leah and Rachel. So the thought is that Leah had soft eyes. And so what essentially I believe that is saying is talking about that she had beautiful eyes. So that was a very attractive feature on her. Whereas Rachel, it seems like she was just beautiful all over. How do you not know who you're being given like on your wedding night? Like, is it as absolutely pitch black? And if it is, like, you're not like talking at all? Like, you they're not twins. Like, do they speak the same? Like, how is that possible for you to just be like, hold up, like, we're not doing this. Like, what are you doing here, bro? Like, this isn't like. And then it's like, oh, after the morning, like, oh, But again, like, had there been that much drinking going on? Were they drunk? Were they just absolutely trashed? Like, how do you get to that point?
That was another thing that stuck out to me.
Go ahead.
Was, like you said, it's just, he gave her Leah. He gave him Leah instead of Rachel. But it's like, that's one thing that stood out to me. It's like, how do you not notice, like, immediately? Like, sure, you may not have known his intentions because it was agreed upon that he would have given him Rachel. But at the moment where he doesn't, it's like, how do you not call that out and be like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? But instead, the night after or the morning after, it's like, to me, it was just like, okay, what?
Like, right, yeah. It's like if, you know, you're doing some work at somebody's house and you go up to them and you're like, okay, well, I will change your roof for $500. And like, okay. And then you go up there and you put used shingles on the roof for $500. Yeah. And then I was like, what's wrong? I was like, oh, well, if you want the real shingles, just pay me another $500. Yeah. You know, it's like, what in the world? Like, if you think about this in today's day and age, it's like, I get that the first daughter was supposed to get married first, and I understand all that, but I don't understand how that happens at all.
Yeah.
And then the second things for me is very interesting again when it comes to Hebrew and the names. So Reuben, which was Leah's birth, the Reuben means see a son. Shimon means hearing, and so that's what it's associating here. Heard her voice. Levi means joining, And then Yehuda, Judah, that means praise. And so it doesn't do a great job of explaining that, but in the Hebrew, that's what those names actually mean and come to. So
that makes sense. Interesting.
Yeah. Anything else to add?
Nope, not from me.
All right. Let's go to Genesis 30. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing children for Yaakov, she envied her sister and said to Yaakov, "Give me children, or I will die." This made Yaakov angry at Rachel. He answered, "Am I in God's place? He's the one who is denying you children." She said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go, sleep with her, and let her give birth to a child that will be laid on my knees, so that through her I too can build a family." So she gave him Bilhah, her slave girl, as his wife, and Yaakov went and slept with her. Bilhah conceived and bore Yaakov a son. Rachel said, "God has judged in my favor. Indeed, he has heard me and given me a son." Therefore she called him Dan. He judged. Bilhah, Rachel's slave girl, conceived again and bore Yaakov a second son. Rachel said, "I have wrestled mightily with my sister and won," and called him Naphtali, my wrestling. When Leah saw that she had stopped having children, she took Zilpah, her slave girl, and gave her to Yaakov as his wife. Zilpah, Leah's slave girl, bore Yaakov a son. And Leah said, "Good fortune has come," calling him Gad, good fortune. Zilpah, Leah's slave girl, bore Yaakov a second son. And Leah said, "How happy am I? Woman will say, I am happy," and called him Asher, happy. During the wheat harvest season, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes so that I can be fertile." She answered, "Isn't it enough that you've taken away my husband? Do you have to take my son's mandrakes too?" Rachel said, "Very well. In exchange for your son's mandrakes, sleep with him tonight." When Yaakov came in from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, You have to come and sleep with me because I have hired you with my son's mandrakes." So Yaakov slept with her that night. God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Yaakov a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me hire because I have gave my slave girl to my husband." So she called him Issachar, hire, reward. Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Yaakov. Leah said, "God has given me a wonderful gift. Now at last my husband will live with me since I have borne him six sons." And she called him Zebulun, living together. After this, she gave birth to a daughter and named her Dinah, controversy over rights. Then God took note of Rachel, heeded her prayer, and made her fertile. She conceived and had a son and said, "God has taken away my disgrace." She called him Yosef. May he add, saying, "May Adonai add to me another son." After Rachel had given birth to Yosef, Yaakov said to Laban, "Send me on my way so that I can return to my own place, to my own country. Let me take my wives for whom I have served you and my children, and let me go. You know very well how faithfully I have served you." Laban answered him, "If you regard me favorably, then please listen. I have observed the signs that Adonai has blessed me on account of you. Name your wages," he said. "I will pay them." Yaakov replied, "You know how faithfully I have served you and how your livestock have prospered under my care. The few you had before I came have increased substantially. Adonai has blessed you wherever I went. But now, when will I provide for my own household?" Laban said, "What should I give you?" "Nothing," answered Yaakov. "Just do this one thing for me. Once more, I will pasture your flock and take care of it. I will also go through the flock and pick out every speckled, spotted, or brown sheep and every speckled or spotted goat. These and their offspring will be in my wages, and I will let my integrity stand as witness against me in the future. When you come to look over the animals constituting my wages, every goat that isn't speckled or spotted and every sheep that isn't brown will count stolen by me." Laban replied, "As you have said, so be it." That day, Laban removed the male goats that were streaked or spotted and all the female goats that were speckled or spotted. Every one with white on it and all the brown sheep turned them over to his sons and put 3 days' distance between himself and Yaakov. Yaakov fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Yaakov took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees and made white streaks on them by peeling off the bark. Then he set the rods he had peeling upright in the water troughs so that the animals would see them when they came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink. The animals mated inside of the rods and gave birth to streaked, speckled, and spotted young. Yaakov divided the lambs and had the animals mate with the streak and the brown in the flock of Laban. He also kept his own livestock separate and did not have them mixed with Laban's flocks. Whenever the hardier animals came into heat, Yaakov would set up the rods in the watering troughs so that the animals would see them and conceive in front of them. But he didn't set up the rods in the front of the weaker animals. Thus, the more feeble were Laban's and the stronger Yaakov's. In this way, the man became very rich and had large flocks, along with male and female slaves, camels, and donkeys. Anything there?
I guess something that stuck out to me was just, like, Jacob worked 7 years for, well, 14 years for Rachel. Seven of them were eventually, then he was working for Leah unknowingly. But then again, the question came up, what shall your wages be? You shouldn't go unpaid. And he kind of went the road of, don't pay me anything, but since I've been such a good shepherd and I've multiplied your fortune and your stock and whatnot, then just let me have the children of said livestock. And then that was pretty much it. And I guess that kind of, I don't know, I guess that was kind of bearing the fruit of his labor, I guess.
And when you're saying bearing the fruit of his labor, you're talking about from the previous 14 years when right. he worked hard to yeah. create for Laban. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's also interesting that he left his parents, Isaac and Rebecca, because the women there weren't what they thought were suitable for him mm-hmm. to hear. But still, he still seems very special, even in Laban's sight, and who he is as a man. Is it because of his heart, like he's sharing right there, his work ethic, his moral compass, his standards, you know, his relationship to God? Seems like it. So there is some type of something that sticks out to show that, to where Laban realized that he'd been successful there and it would have been the hand of God that was on him to be able to do that. And, mm-hmm. you know, you bring up, I guess, a good point. It's like, how does that apply in our lives today? Like, are there specific people where you can see the fruits, the blessings, and those types of things where you understand that they have a deep relationship with God? My struggle is that I don't really see what that represents anymore, because in society, so many people are on that same level, whether it's, you know, in terms of income. There's mm-hmm. some people who are making well more money than people who I would consider anywhere religious, or, you know, there's bad people that have a lot of money, which I guess mm-hmm. back then you can see examples of that too. But it's like, what do we use to be able to determine how close someone is with God now? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I guess something that I wanted to add on my previous point before I get back to that is just kind of, he worked for that extra amount of time for Laban, even though he was unsure if Laban was going to follow through on his promise, even though previously he didn't. So just, I guess, the idea of giving a second chance and doing what you think is right, regardless of the situation, is, look, you might not even get what you're asking for, but the idea of doing it right with that that risk being there still is something that's very admirable. But the way of, I guess, I don't know, I guess it's not really my position to determine if the distance somebody is from God is, everybody knows their own religious perspective, I guess. And it's just, I don't know, not to judge based off of what you see, but just treat everybody as if they're doing their best to be closer to God, I guess, and just kind of work on yourself is kind of what I'm gathering from this, I guess.
Yeah, and maybe I presented that not such a great way, but it was more of that understanding where Laban was able to clearly see this relationship that he had with God, and he acknowledged it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's pretty powerful that someone is able to see that. And so I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to think more of, is that if that's so, how do we create that in our own personal lives so that we exemplify that to the point where people see it in us without us standing on a church or on a street corner with a sign, you know, that says, I'm a good person, right, or I'm a Christian, or you should do this or you should do that.
Right. Like in the past episodes, we talked about, I talked in specifically about kind of the window washer that we always talk to on the job sites and that I always talk to on the job site. And we always have a conversation going back and forth. It's like, that guy, he talks about how religious and whatnot, but he follows through on his core beliefs and his actions rather than just saying, hey, look at me. I'm a deacon. I'm this. I'm that. I believe in God. I'm this. But he follows through. He prays for you. He remembers your name. He takes his beliefs and puts them into action rather than just standing at the wayside and kind of letting life just go by, I guess. Takes action.
Yeah, and 100%. That's what I heard you saying, is that his actions speak louder than his words. Mm-hmm. Or where some people, hopefully, it's not me, where my words speak louder than my actions. I think that should be a goal for us all, is for our actions to speak louder than our words, and whatever it is that we're trying to perpetuate or show or guide. And I think, you know, what you just shared maybe has a little bit of clarity to this situation. One of the reasons that Laban probably saw that is because he was really trying to be a trickster to Jacob a number of times. Like, oh, well, I'll make him work 7 years and I'll give him this one. Like, dang, okay, well, now he's going to work another 7 years. Like, okay, wow, now he does that. And I keep like changing his wages and stuff like that. And he still is staying to his foundations and going and doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think you brought up a good point. Like, he just, his trust, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he trusted his beliefs. He's stuck to what he believed. And I think in today's day and age, it's very difficult to try to trust others. Like if you go to a job and be like, oh, I'll just start working here and you pay me whatever you think I'm worth. It's like, yeah, no, like, what's your offer? I'll tell you my offer.
Yeah.
Come to agreement. Yeah. And then we'll get there. But it's not going to be just like, oh, we'll see, or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, pay up or shut up. Like, you know what I mean? There just isn't that. And I think a lot of that has to do with just what we've became as a society and how we treat people and how everything is maybe based off of profitability, pride, arrogance, selfishness, and those types of things. I think the last thing that I guess I want to kind of bring up is that if you look at these women and just how important it was for them to have children, and how hard they fought for essentially their husband to be able to give them more children and bring on more seed. And it's just, you know, obviously we're at the very beginning of time still in the creation of this world and how many people there probably were on the earth in them. And, you know, the more people you have, the more family you have, the more you can accomplish and build, whether it's farms or houses, or the bigger your army is, or any of those things. So you can see the importance, but still it's just, even in society today, you know, that family unit is still powerful. The more people you have behind you, the stronger you can be. Whereas, you know, I think sometimes it's often said that it's selfish to not have kids and to just have animals and stuff like that. And it's like, well, is it really? Because if you think about it, like, they're not building any type of generational wealth to be able to uplift their name, or when they pass away, it's just, you know, being able to enjoy that life Whereas here, but how do you build that strength and that power to be able to conquer? And it doesn't only come from families, but, you know, I guess connecting with other people through different resources and money or whatever it might be. But that's just always been very interesting to me, because for me, children bring me a lot of joy. So I just enjoy being around them. I enjoy hearing the laughter and being able to impact kids versus maybe just seeing what they can do for me and, you know, taking care of my corn or my beans that I don't have to work so hard or anything like that.
Right.
Helping me raise my cattle so that, you know, we don't have to look for food during the winter or anything like that.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's kind of another way of looking at it, is the same. Like, we've gotten to the point where we don't really have to worry about things like that. So we don't see our children as our workers anymore. We bring children up in this world to live with us, to grow with us, to just be a part of each other's lives, rather than I'm going to have a child to build up my army or to raise my cattle or farm for me or whatever. But back in those days, it was you farm and you get to eat, or you don't farm and you starve. So
yeah,
I feel like that's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, how fortunate are we in this today's day and age where we overthink things and most of our mental problems are based on what we don't have or what has happened to us, versus here it's just try to survive. Let's just try to not get eaten by tigers or lions. Mm-hmm. Let's try to make sure that the Ishmaelites aren't coming over to steal our wells or to try to kill us. Or like, it's just like, I live inside this four corners of a wall where the safety, I can sleep very easily at night. I've never really had an issue sleeping. I turn on my noisemaker and sleep very soundly. So, I mean, it's just, it's great in one way where technology and the advancements have come. I think it's difficult in another way where we talk about the things that come in and consume us, because I think those types of things have drawn us farther away from that creator and trying to have closeness with him and trying to have an understanding with him, because you create all these things in your mind. Your mind is a sponge and it gathers all these things, and it's so many associations of all these things. Whereas just being out in the farm and relying on the rain for my crops, mm-hmm. cows to be able to have food to grow, whatever that is, sheep, goats, so that we can have meat, so that we can have meals. There's a lot more trust. Also, the time that's spent, you're not scrolling through Instagram and seeing all these things that we're just bombarded with. You're just out there in the field thinking about the simple things of life and praying straight up to the creator and trying to ask him for guidance and clarity on what life looks like. And trust.
Yeah.
So, no, I think that's really all I have to add.
Alrighty. You want to go ahead and go for chapter 31?
Yeah, I just read. You can.
Oh, I thought I just read that. Oh, you... No, that's right. You did read that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. 31. Jacob flees from Laban. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, "Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all his wealth from what belonged to our father." And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude toward him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come with him to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, "I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, 'The speckled ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, 'The streaked ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. In breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats mating with the flock were streaked, speckled, or spotted. The angel of God said to me in my dream, Jacob, I answered, here I am. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. Then Rachel and Leah replied, do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took away from our father's belongings to us belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God has told you. Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels and drove all of his livestock ahead of him, along with all the goods he had accumulated in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he was running away. So he fled with all he had, crossed the Euphrates River, and headed for the hill country of Gilead. On the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled, taking his relatives with him. He pursued Jacob for 7 days and caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. Then God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream at night and said to him, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country of Gilead when Laban overtook him, and Laban and his relatives camped there too. Then Laban said to Jacob, what have you done? You've deceived me, and you've carried off my daughters like captives in war? Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me so I could send you away with joy and singing to the music of timbrels and harps? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. You have done a foolish thing. I have the power to harm you. But last night, the God of your father said to me, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Now you have gone off because you long to return to your father's household. But why did you steal my gods? Jacob answered Laban, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters away from me by force. But if you find anyone who has your gods, that person shall not live. In the presence of our relatives, see yourself whether there is anything of yours here with me, and if so, take it. Now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two female servants, but he had found nothing. After he came out of Leah's tent, he entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them inside her camel's saddle, and was sitting on them. Laban searched through everything in the tent, but found nothing. Rachel said to her father, don't be angry, my lord, that I cannot stand up in your presence. I'm having my period. So he searched. He could not find the household gods. Jacob was angry and took Laban to task. What is my crime? He asked Laban. How have I wronged you that you hunt me down? Now that you have searched through all my goods, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine, and let them judge between the two of us. I have been with you for 20 years now. Your sheep and goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten rams from your flocks. I did not bring you animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself, and you demanded payment from me or for whatever was stolen by day or night. This was my situation. The heat consumed me in the daytime, and the cold at night, and sleep fled from my eyes. It was like this for 20 years I was in your household. I worked for you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. Laban answered Jacob, the women are my daughters, the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks. All you see is mine. Yet what can I do today about these daughters of mine, or about the children they have born? Come now, let's make a covenant, you and I, and let it serve as a witness between us. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. He said to his relatives, gather some stones. So they took stones and piled them in a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jagar Sahudutha, and Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today. This is why it was called Galeed. It was also called Mizpah, because he said, 'May the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take any wives besides my daughters, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between you and me.'" Laban also said to Jacob, "Here is this heap, and here is this pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to a meal. After they had eaten, they spent the night there. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then he left and returned home.
So something that's interesting here is, again, he was moving from his parents to go pick another wife, but it also looks like the girls went and stole their father's, essentially, idols. So there was idol worship there in Laban's household. To what extent, it doesn't really say, but I think that's interesting. I would say the second thing that's eye-opening to me through a lot of this, when it goes to Jacob coming here and being able to help and essentially grow things, Laban is still saying, "Well, yeah, but these are my daughters. These are my grandchildren. These are my flocks." It's like, how do you determine what the inheritance is, right? So Isaac gave Jacob essentially Esau's inheritance, but who's are these to give? Who holds these things? You know, these were actually things that Laban owns. So when does Jacob take ownership of those things to where they become his? It seems like it's because of the agreement, and like, how do you create those agreements? And I think it's very easy as a child to be jealous of someone else maybe getting inheritance, or not understanding why it's not mine, but in reality, like, whose is it to give? And it's part of making that deal and that covenant. And once that's made, is really essentially all it is that agreement, right? That contract. Sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you work, who you are as a person. It's about the contract, the agreement that you have. Like at work, it's like, "Oh, I should be making $50 an hour." It's like, okay, yeah. Well, what did you get hired at? Well, I got hired at 12. Well, that's what you're going to get paid. So. Right. You know, now if you're valuable to the company and they start seeing that and they start becoming more profitable, having more sheep and lambs, then there's a good chance that you're going to be compensated for that. Or you're going to have the opportunity to move to another company where you will get compensated for, right? So, and that's what surprises me. Like, just why Jacob just didn't be like, "All right, I'm done. Like, I don't want any more sheep. I don't want any more of this. Like, this is just like, I don't want to keep making, deal with this nonsense. Like, you're just a screwball. Like, I'm going to go back and do this somewhere else. Like, where I can make more money and be compensated and cared for, you know what I mean? Feel valuable."
Yeah, because even all the way up until the very end, Laban was still trying to pull a fast one on him, you know? So
yeah
like, just trying to get away from that.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know how that is at work. It's not super enjoyable when you're under that type of leadership or management, to where it's just like, I'm never good enough. I never do what you want. Mm-hmm. Like, you never want to pay me, but you want to hold on to me. Like, yeah, Laban obviously realized the value that Jacob brought. He didn't want to lose him, mm-hmm. but he also didn't want to really pay him what he's worth.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, just that. Oh, well, I'm making him. Yeah. I'm doing very, very well off you, but I don't want to pay you so that you will stay. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to lose you.
Try to capitalize off of you as much as possible without pushing you over the line of just sheer ridiculousness and forcing you to leave, pretty much. Trying to toe that line, but eventually it got to a point where it's like, all right, I'm out of here.
Right, squeezing every little last bit drop out that they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, usually that leads to absolute burnout, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder where he was with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that and trying to go somewhere where you're valued and being able to see when you're not valued and realizing it's time to move on. I mean, it obviously took this point where it was even Jacob's daughters that were kind of agreeing with him and being mm-hmm. like, what is ours anymore? Like, he's trying to take everything. Like, it's time to go. So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all my thoughts and everything that you shared.
That's pretty much all I had too.
All right.
Did you want to
That's four chapters.
Yep. Did you want to just wrap it up there?
Yeah, I think so.
All righty. Perfect.
All you guys listening, I hope you're enjoying. If you have any comments, there's anything you want to share about what we're reading, maybe some enlightening things or some questions that you might have so that we can ponder them together, we would love to hear. And we're just enjoying doing this, trying to go on this journey that we call life and being better today than we were yesterday, with the hopes of being better tomorrow than we were today.
Mm-hmm. And like we said, like, this is just kind of a journey that we're going on, and we're all just kind of trying to learn together through the stories of that are brought to us by the Bible. It's not that we're experts by any means, but just trying to take all these stories day to day and kind of apply them to life and take all the value that it has and just kind of try to break it down, live life, and live by the words written in this book.
Yeah, and before this podcast, me and Jake had a discussion about kind of what our goals were with this, and our goals are somewhat different, and what we're trying to learn and how this is applied, how we're applying it to ourselves, and mm-hmm. what we're trying to gain out of it, and how we're trying to study it, and those types of things. And that's okay. We realize the importance that this has in terms of a book and how we can apply it to our lives and whatever else that may look like. Again, the goal of this whole podcast was to be able to unite people that fear God. And so that's been our main focus. The Bible seems to be the best way to be able to do that. For me, it's also going further than that and trying to figure out how I use this book to draw closer to God on a personal level, like I would with my father, like I would with my brother Jake. We've grown a lot closer through having this podcast. It's talking back and forth, communicating back and forth. And my one struggle with God is that, well, I can sit and I can pray and I can cry out to him. Sometimes I don't hear that audible voice, and I don't know if it's just me or I don't know what it is, but sometimes it's difficult to just be able to understand where he's at and do that. Now, I was brought some really nice comfort this weekend by just being able to enjoy going to church and being able to have that. And I was brought a lot of comfort in that. And so I feel like that was from God. So there are those opportunities, and it doesn't always have to just be an audible voice, but my eyes and my ears, maybe all my senses have to be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I think, we're kind of continuing in the story of Jacob this week, and next week will probably be a little bit more of the story of Jacob and him returning to his father and that household, and yeah, kind of see where it goes from there and just continue kind of learning each and every day.
Yeah, and then and we're going to see his kids get older, all the boys.
Yep.
how they're raised.
Yep.
So.
Alrighty.
Send you guys off with that.
Yep.
Lila Tove. That means good night.
Night, everybody.